low tide at 12:08 p.m., then high tide once again at 5:51 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 60 degrees and the tide strength is high. Sunset today will be at 8:07 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:20 a.m. Looking way up, we see a plasma ribbon sparked a G3 level storm last night. It was hard enough to feel like an Hadouken. And if it rang our bell hard enough, it could have some auroras or other magnetic activity. Nerds call these things a co-rotating interaction region and a coronal mass ejection respectively, but my words are more fun and easier to say. X-class flare chances are at 10%, plasma winds will be fast at 664 kilometers per second with a thin density of 3 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently being impacted on all bands, and you know why. There are medium chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 126, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Hello, welcome to the Thursday afternoon show with your host Justin Calder and Rebecca Bohr. And today we have a special guest, Caroline Q.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here. Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah, thanks for coming. So you are working at Olana currently. And what's your role there?
Yeah, so I work for the Olana Partnership. I'm the Director of Education and Public Programs there, which means I have the great pleasure and fun of designing all of our public programs, from field trips for school students all the way through public lectures, workshops, and other great fun concerts like things we have coming up this summer, but also the program that we have coming up on June 14th. So, yeah.
Nice, nice. Yeah, you guys have a packed schedule, it looks like.
Summer, like many other organizations in the Hudson Valley, summer is the time, right? I mean, we do things all year, but this is really our peak moment. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. And typically classes are all ages?
Yeah, so we offer adult classes, but we also offer some robust family programs, which are really designed for families of all ages, intergenerational groups, and those are on the weekends, the third Saturday of every month. So those are something that we're really excited about that we've been kind of amping up over the past couple of years. Yeah.
Nice, nice.
Amazing.
Awesome. Yeah. So are they usually art classes?
Yeah. So we do a program called Drop-In Art Making in the Afternoon, where folks can come and we provide all the materials, all of the prompts to kind of get creativity going. So if people are kind of walking the site or walking the 250 acres and want to, do some drawing, sketching, painting, they can stop into our Wagon House Education Center and get their creative groove on. Yeah.
Nice, nice. I guess we should backtrack a little bit and tell anyone who doesn't know what Olana is and where it is.
Thanks for teeing me up for that. Yeah, I appreciate it. So Olana, we're right across the bridge. We're in Catskill now, but we're across the bridge. Olana State Historic Site is the State Historic Site residence and creation of the 19th century artist Frederick Church. So it is 250 acres of artist-designed landscape. So by that I mean parcels of land that Frederick Church acquired over a 40-year period that ends up creating this really dynamic immersive landscape that you can kind of explore today. So it's almost like walking through a living landscape painting. There's also the family home, which a lot of folks locally might affectionately call the castle. You can see it crossing the bridge. So on my way back over to Columbia County, I'll see it up high on the hill. But there's also a historic farm complex and a new visitor center that opened last year, which we're really excited about. Yeah.
Cool.
It's an incredible place to watch a sunset.
Oh my gosh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, Ridge Road, which is one of those historic carriage roads. That's my favorite spot to watch a sunset. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very nostalgic, I would say. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it feels like you're in this landscape painting.
Totally, yeah.
And also I've seen a lot of programs there that kind of honor like the natural landscape in and of itself, like have ecological twists to them and that sort of educational aspect, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think we really have been exploring this intersection of art and ecology more and more. I mean, it's something that was motivating a lot of the Hudson River School, quote-unquote, painters, but we know that Frederick Church was thinking really deeply not only about what grew in this region, not only about some of the plants that he kind of grew and cultivated at his working farm. He was a painter, but he was also really invested in his orchard, growing apples and peaches and cherries. But he also was really interested in naturalism and science. And so those are some intersections that we're trying to kind of probe and really use as jumping off points for contemporary invitations for folks to come and explore the landscape and think about the way that they interact with their own environments, because I think that really lives in the spirit of what Church was doing in the 19th century.
Mm. Yeah.
So, like, the plantings that he had done are still just, are those places that you can still walk in all that?
Yeah. So we have been through about a 12-year process of a landscape restoration, which we've done. We started, over a decade ago with Nelson Bird Woltz, which is a landscape architecture firm, and they helped us come up with a strategic design plan, landscape design plan, to figure out kind of how to bring the landscape back to what Frederick Church, how it looked when Frederick Church was living there. Many of the trees that you see on the carriage roads likely were planted by Church or planted by folks that he hired to plant these trees. The site itself was largely deforested when he purchased these parcels of land. The top of the site was actually a woodlot, so there weren't many of those trees that you might see when you're kind of enjoying the views from up at the top. And at the base of the site, you know, while you can't see the working farm any longer, we're hoping to bring that back in the next, you know, couple of years. That's next on the docket. So I'm really excited about that because I think the farm restoration will be another opportunity to kind of bring people in and design programming around this intersection of art and agriculture, which I think is another really fruitful area of exploration that Church was deeply, deeply embedded in. We have beautiful sketches of his his orchards in bloom and things like that. Wonderful quotes that he wrote to his dad in letters about his wife, like sitting under the apple trees in bloom and the snap peas unfurling. And I think it's an experience that, you know, a lot of us might recognize in our own time spending in the Hudson Valley, seeing those things. Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah.
It's so beautiful. And also just like the, you know, the magic of ecology, right, where you just like go to the tree and you pick the fruit and you eat it, and it's not about any sort of additional exchange. You're just kind of like participating in this thing that's just readily there. Do you think people will be able to, with the orchard, get to like access it in that type of way?
Well, right now we have a couple of scraggly apple trees, so we don't have I don't think anybody wants that fruit right now. And we're really in this kind of like R&D, research and development phase for the farm. We don't quite know what it will be, but what we do know is that we want to bring back some marker of what the farm was to Church, because it was such an integral part of this story. Frederick Church and his wife Isabel actually called the site the farm for about 10 years before the name Olana ever came to be used for this whole enterprise. So I think, you know, we don't know what it will hold, but what we're excited about is kind of honoring that part of the site's history. Mm. Yeah.
Cool. Cool. That's always sort of the case in my experience. You never know what's going to grow in a farm or in a garden.
That's very true.
But that's really exciting. Yeah. Kind of rounding the circle of the holistic vision there.
Totally.
It's really interesting too, kind of the idea of, you know, really thinking to what Frederick Church like wanted, or like how he and his wife utilize the space in the future, right? And then like, is that like in Adolana like a core part of what you all are seeking to do?
That's a great question. I mean, I think sometimes we obviously want to bring some of what motivated Church and the spirit of his kind of career and creativity to our contemporary audiences. I think that's a kind of core mission. But I will just say, I think sometimes when we've done a program and a marker that I sometimes feel, I'm like, oh, Frederick Church would have loved that. Like, I feel really successful when we do one that I know maybe he would have really appreciated. Last year we did a webinar, for example, with a wonderful chief scientist and botanist with New York Botanic Gardens, and he actually zoomed in from the rainforest and showed us all of these tropical plants that were in some of Church's paintings, and talked about how Church represented them so realistically and kind of traced some of the ecological facts about these plants. And I thought, oh, Church would love this program. So that felt like a real testament to some of the intersections of his interest.
Yeah. It's like the intersection of his past interests and then the interest of the current community. Yeah. It's really fascinating.
And our own moment, too. I mean, I think so much of what he was thinking about and what drove his kind of impetus for creating Olana are things that I think we can perhaps all relate to, wanting to design and build an environment that inspires us. And I think that's really one of the chief motivating factors for Church in designing Olana, the whole holistic site.
Mm. Yeah. No kidding.
Wow. So you have a bunch of programs coming up this summer.
Yeah.
And do you want to tell us a little bit about the one that's on June 14th?
I would love to. Yeah, I think the June 14th program is actually a great example of kind of bringing some of this history to a contemporary lens. And we're doing that in a couple of different ways. We're bringing on two artists for the summer to bring two site-specific installations to the landscape, and that's going to be opening on June 14th. So the June 14th program is very much a celebration of this exhibition, What's Missing, but it's also a celebration of our new visitor center that opened last fall. So we're going to be hosting a kind of afternoon of conversation and celebration. We're finishing two conversations with some wine refreshment with Never Still Wine, which we're excited about. And we're excited to kind of have some opportunity just to like have a toast to the new visitor center, which we haven't done yet. And so we'll be kicking off the program with a conversation with Mark Streeter from our wonderful Nelson Bird Woltz, who I mentioned before, who helped us with this long-standing strategic landscape design plan. And Nelson Bird Woltz, this firm, Thomas Woltz and Mark Streeter, were essential for designing the landscape around the whole site and then this new visitor center. We'll also be bringing two folks from ARO, Architecture Research Office, Adam Urinsky and Kim Yao, to come and be in conversation about how this building functions and how it's kind of a new entryway or portal for the site, for folks to come and explore and visit the site and see it in a new way and really understand it as a holistic landscape. And then after that, we'll be joined by our two wonderful artists who will be exhibiting their site-specific installation starting on that date, Ellen Harvey and Gabriela Salazar. And I'm so excited for these contemporary artists to kind of crack open parts of the site's history that folks might not be as familiar with and that we certainly haven't shown a light on in a while or in a real way in the way that these exhibitions will be doing. So, yeah.
Wow. Mm. So also site specific, you mean these artworks are going to be throughout the landscape?
Yeah, they'll be out in the landscape. Gabriela's piece will be actually in the farm complex. So while we don't have active agriculture there, we do have bees, which is exciting. We have two beehives, which we're really excited about. We partner with Fox Farm Apiary to keep those healthy and running and all of that. But Gabriela was really inspired and motivated by the extant structures, two of the kind of foundation structures that still exist, the woodshed and the ice house, and these two kind of utilitarian structures that would have been common in 19th century life, but we certainly don't use anymore as kind of mechanisms for cooling and heating. Yeah. So her pieces will be situated on the kind of foundations or the ruins of those two structures, which I think really will call attention to this overlooked part of the site's history, which is how did Frederick Church stay cool? How did he stay warm? How did his family, put ice in their drinks or keep their food cold? And that's kind of what Gabriela is uncovering. Her piece has a wonderful title, which I really love, A Measure of Comfort, Cake and Cord, referring to a cake of ice and a cord of wood. So that's going to be, I think, a wonderful way to kind of dive into the farm history, but also the industrial history in this region as well.
Yeah,
really. That the ice industry in this in this area was kind of fascinating.
We're having Jonathan Palmer come and do a little talk, kind of in connection with the exhibition as well. Yeah,
very cool.
Cool.
And wait, what time is that?
The June 14th program is going to be from 4 to 6 p.m. So we'll kick things off with a panel conversation with our landscape architects and our architects, and then at 5 p.m. we'll have our artists be in conversation with one another.
Beautiful.
It's going to be a great and lovely afternoon and a great opportunity to see our new terrace, which provides a new view down by the new visitor center as well. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Would you, as someone that goes to Olana?
Yeah.
Where the visitor center is it that big thing that's being built at the bottom?
It's built. It's not the thing that's being built outside on Route 9G, but when you come into the site, the first right that you might see on the kind of lower building, it's all red, that is the new visitor center.
Okay,
and
cool.
Yeah, it's open when, the site is open and when we have tours operating. And even when it's not open, like I mentioned, there's this great new terrace that provides a new, or maybe I would say, kind of reframed view of the landscape. And it's one of the composed views that we know Church was actually thinking about when he had the lake put in and was kind of doing all of the things he did to make the landscape a composition. Yeah.
Wow, it's so wild. It was like really terraforming.
Well, it's funny. We actually had a contemporary artist a couple years ago do an exhibition called Terraforming, David Hart. And so that, thinking about that, yeah.
Yeah, so fascinating.
Yeah, but I like the idea of, it's terraforming for aesthetics.
For painting aesthetics.
Yeah, for painting aesthetics.
Yeah.
And I do see the connection between like landscape painting and ecology. I mean, maybe it seems obvious, but you are trying to be an observer for very long periods of time throughout the seasons, which, you begin to be in tune with the cycle and the kind of the phenomenon or phenology, I guess they call it, right, of when certain species come into bloom. And so, yeah, I can see how he developed a real appreciation.
Totally,
And a real investment.
Yeah.
In that environment.
And that's something that the other artist, Ellen Harvey, who we're going to be working with to do the second site-specific installation, is really thinking about. Her piece is just going to be so much fun. I'm so excited about it. I'm excited about both, but her piece is going to be a kind of 20-foot high structure, a gazebo-based structure, out on the summer house location, which is kind of a lawn down at the base of where the historic house is, and she's really thinking about church's experiences in the Arctic and how it kind of connects with and dovetails with what we're seeing now, which is the melting of the icebergs. Church was a painter of icebergs. He went on travels to the Arctic and painted these objects very detailed ways, and so what might he think of them melting? Her piece will actually be covered in mirrors, almost like a giant gazebo disco ball, so it'll be a fun piece. But when you step inside, the light, the mirrors will be engraved with iceberg and winter scenes, and so her piece is called Winter in the Summer House. And so I think it really connects with church as an observer and an observer of phenomena that maybe we're seeing disappear before our eyes. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, that's part of the, that's part of the whole project that you guys are doing, right? And like we were talking about trying to figure out what Frederick Church had in mind or what was actually there. You're calling us back to what was a different society's relationship to the land and through these industries, for better or for worse, what it was.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting adventure.
Yeah. And I think, what can we learn from that today, right? Yeah. How can we apply it to our relationship with the landscape now?
So how did Frederick Church get to do all of this stuff?
That's such a great question. I mean, he certainly was born with a level of privilege. I mean, I think that that's something to acknowledge and recognize, but he also was a very savvy businessman. And at a certain point, his dad, who was a successful businessman, his support did end, and he was responsible for kind of making ends meet and supporting his family with the sale of his artwork. So he was very entrepreneurial and really kind of leveraged a lot of new technologies to kind of promote the sale of his artwork, but also to promote the sale of lithographs and prints. And so that was kind of an interesting mode that he used to amass wealth that would be required to do a project like this. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. He was hugely successful in his time. Really one of the most, if not the most, successful and famous American artists in that period. Mm. Yeah.
How did the name Olana come to be?
Yeah, it's a great question. We get it. It's like one of the top FAQs. And so I never really mention it because somebody always asks. So I love when I do get it because I often forget to mention it.
It just occurred to me after like 8 years of going
it's
there.
True. Yeah. I also have no idea. I love that. It's, we don't know for certain, but what we think, the running theory is that it may have been pulled from Strabo's Geographica, like a text that the church family had in their library. And there was a mention of a place called Olane, O-L-A-N-E, which was a place in Persia, and it was referred to as a fortress overlooking a fertile river valley, I believe. And so we think perhaps they dropped the E and added an A. But I think it's also important to provide context that, in Victorian period, it was very common to give your house or your kind of residence, or in this case, your holistic landscape design, this piece of almost earth art that you had made, a name and a feminine one at that. So the A, I think.
Wow. Fascinating stuff. It's really, one thing I really love about Olana is that you take a place that for Frederick Church and his family, I guess, was a privately owned location, and now it's a place where like anyone really can come, go for a walk, go enjoy. I mean, anytime I go for a walk there, I'm always like, there's more. And I've also seen, I years ago I went to a WGXC event that took place at Olana, and there was a lot of wild stuff going on in those woods.
Was that groundswell?
Awesome.
You can stumble upon any number of kind of almost mystical things going on there sometimes. Yeah, last time I went on a walk there, it was midwinter, and there were like three people wandering on the path with like, I don't know, some strange instruments. Like one was a sheet of metal that they were kind of batting about, and I was like, I don't know if you're just taking your instruments on a walk, or this is like an art gallery I'm involved in?
Yeah, I think one of my favorite things is just seeing how people are using the space and seeing how many people are walking their dogs and just, you know, painting on site like Frederick Church did. That's always really wonderful to see. And you, like you mentioned, we are a public park. And so I work for the nonprofit that works in close collaboration with New York State to offer all the programming and interpretation. But, you know, we are a New York State public park. And so that is, you know, Alana was Frederick Church's, but it very much is now all of ours, which is really exciting.
It's very cool.
Yeah, it's at the top of the hill for everyone. It's like, because it's, as you said, it's this kind of castle overlooking, but it's a refuge, as I was kind of treating it like that when I first moved here. It was a place to go to kind of calm down.
And I think, you know, our hope is that more people will use our new visitor center in that way too, and kind of learn more. Like you said, there's always more to explore, and I think our new visitor center, which has wonderful new interpretive panels and more information about the history of the preservation of the site, I hope that, you know, people, it'll be open to the public, so you can just walk on in and sit, you know, enjoy the views and learn a little bit more. So, I hope that folks do enjoy that the new visitor in that center in that way as well.
Cool. Well,
amazing.
I think we're going to take a little musical break soon, but before we do that, why don't you tell us where to get information about this event?
So you can go to olana.org, art and landscape, and you can learn a little bit more about what's missing on our website as well. So that's the exhibition that will be opening on June 14th. Those two site-specific installations in the landscape, but it'll be up all summer into the beginning of fall. So we're really excited about that. Yeah.
Amazing.
Cool. So you are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Thursday afternoon show. My name's Justin.
And Acre. Catskill.
My name's Acre. Catskill. No.
I'm a Catskill.
Yeah, WGXC Acre.
Wow, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having
me.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Carolyn.
I have a pipe dream that one day everybody that we have interviewed on the Thursday afternoon show during the summer, this summer, we will all start a band together. And while we were not on air, I did discuss a little bit about this with you. And I am very excited for the possibilities for the future in seeing you on the trails at Olana or perhaps making some techno music.
Yeah. It's great to be in a band.
I'll revive my techno career. Absolutely. Thank you.
Incredible. Okay, absolutely amazing. Lovely to meet you. And yes, June 14th. And a summer full of programs as well.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Olana.org. All right, y'all. See you in a bit. are listening to WGXC Acre 9.7 FM. And I should mention that we were just talking to Carolyn from Olana. And a little disclaimer there that Olana is a current underwriter for WGXC. It was a pleasure to talk to her about what they're doing over there. But now we are joined by another guest, Matthew O'Neill.
Hello, hello.
Hey, Matthew.
Welcome.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on.
Good to be here.
So you are a WGXC programmer.
That's right.
It's one of the things you do, right?
I do. I have a monthly show called Panther Mountain Sound.
Awesome.
Third Wednesday of the month at 10 a.m.
I like it. I like it a lot. I'm a longtime fan.
Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's people listening. That's always good.
For sure. In my old job, it provided kind of a nice, peaceful spot.
Oh, good.
While I was working.
Where were you?
I was working at a kind of a puzzle factory, as I call
it,
called Nervous System. Yeah, it's like a generative design company over there in Palinville.
Palinville, New York. Next to a very strange building in Palinville, New York, with a grand piano.
Oh, the castle? Yeah.
I always want to go in there.
Palinville?
Yeah, yeah, it's a very,
That's Palinville for you.
Yeah, yeah. Palinville.
There's like a pretty great series of like a place that I'm pretty sure they self-identify as witches.
It's the Matrionum of Sibel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
and they have a radio station.
Is that slander?
What?
That they self-identify as like. They practice.
Have you discussed it with anyone that
That's
lives
true,
at
I
the Matrionum?
But I have tuned into their radio station.
It's amazing.
And I think they even put up signs that.
Wait, they have a radio station?
Yeah.
They have a micro radio station over there.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
right next to Circle W.
Okay.
And then it's like Puzzle Factory Castle. Sandwich place.
Yeah, it's basically like right in a line, all those things.
Yeah,
I probably haven't even. We did our benefit for the Aqua Sauce and Freedom School at Griffin House last year. That's so across from the
sandwich
place.
You're right across the street, yeah.
But I didn't notice a castle. I guess I was just focused on what I was doing.
It's behind a bush, so.
Yeah.
But it's still very visible.
Yeah. So you usually broadcast out of Acre?
I do. Yeah, I love it up there. And, and you walk the land after the show, and you know, it's all the sculptures and installations up there. So,
yeah, there's a lot going on up there.
Plus, this wasn't here when I started, so it it's more of like a pattern. And I live in Woodland Valley, so it's about the same distance from my house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
nice. Well, yeah, I mean, I should also mention just quickly there's a pretty crazy WGXC Waveform event happening tonight, which I haven't mentioned thus far. It's the Eno screening.
I didn't even know about it.
The Highway Drive-In, baby. Yeah, there's a concert, like a sunset performance with Fred Frith and who else? And Yukademics, or Yuka Honda, and Kadala Burrows, or Sanjiro, will be all playing on top of the concession stand, like on the rooftop.
Wow.
At sunset. And then there's going to be four different versions of the generative documentary Eno playing simultaneously on all four screens.
What? That's actually so amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of bonkers. It almost sounds overstimulating, but then I remembered, I mean, it's a drive-in, so all the screens are
You decide, which one to tune into, right?
Yeah, you can pop into different ones, tune your radio to a different, station to find that soundtrack.
That feels like that is like a good lineage of what that documentary is trying to do, to have four of them playing at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
With the capacity to tune in, back and forth even.
You're kind of your own DJ for the film there. So just putting that out there, that's happening tonight. I think the doors open at 7.
And there's it's going to be I think there's over 400 tickets have been sold already, so it's going to be a scene.
It is, yeah.
I've never been there. Apparently, it's massive, though. If there's four screens, it's bigger than any drive-in I've ever been to.
Yeah, apparently they can accommodate 400 cars, I think.
Right.
So it's a pretty big place. But I wanted to invite you on, Matthew, just to talk about what else you're doing besides the radio show.
Well, yeah, the radio show is a branch. I have a project called Panther Mountain Collective, which came out of a record label called Underwater Panther Coalition, and we just became a nonprofit recently. So it's a record label, but it's also, you know, open to other artistic disciplines. You know, it's just centered on like artists who are in conversation with the land and the water, and for those who are restoring those relationships, and for people who are creating radical work that's rooted in those relationships and dynamics. But the mission is just to create, you know, like positive futures in the present based on just generative creative capacities of individuals and communities and supporting communities. So, and everything's kind of centered in, you know, Native culture, because that's where we are here. And, but it's also just like intersecting with decolonial projects and just people's efforts to re-indigenize their practices. So it's a new thing, and I'm excited about it. So if there's anybody out there listening that feels like that fits what they're doing, you can hit us up on the website, and we'd be interested in, you know, seeing what you're doing and collaborating.
Cool. What is that website?
It's panthermountain.io. Nice. So yeah, it's real easy to remember.
Cool. Yeah. I like how you phrase that and how you point out that sound is essential to kind of healing that relationship with our environment, to re-indigenizing our way of thinking and practices.
Yeah, centralizing music. Music has always been central to cultural resilience, cultural innovation, mm-hmm. cultural restoration now because of what's happened.
Yeah.
And it's basically my like life commitment to recenter music in those ways, because it also has been co-opted by colonial framing, just like everything else. So there's a lot more to music than, you know, entertainment, which is not, you know, WGXC listeners are familiar with this, but, you know, in terms of like the mainstream and the street, it's just trying to bring back the concept of how important music is on a day-to-day basis when it comes to living in right relationship with all our relatives here. So it's a big thing, but it's also just like very doable, and everybody loves music, and it's just like a recentering, like you're saying. And I have a background in sound studies and cultural studies and all these things, so it also just makes more sense to me than anything.
Can you tell us about a project that you've done maybe in the past like year or 2 years through this to learn a little bit more?
Sure. I mean, I'm about to release a record, field recordings I did with my friend Teresa Bear Fox, who's from Akwesasne. She's an elder, and she's been really important with cultural restoration in Akwesasne, because her brothers were part of like the early like 70s, 80s movement, and it kind of came out of AIM and things, and she was around and she was young, and she's picking up all this great pride in her culture and bringing back traditional ways. But then, and they have like these traditions, singing traditions too, that were kind of lost, and so she took it upon herself to bring back the singing groups, and when it, you know, started writing music in her own language in Mohawk, which has been really impactful for her community and beyond. So, you know, like if, for example, if they're bringing back a certain ceremony that's coming back into practice, but the song might be lost, Teresa will write a song for the, and that song is now the song for the ceremonial practice. Mm. So this project is basically me and her hanging out, talking about how all this happened, and then it's a bunch of recordings of, you know, songs in English and Mohawk that she's written and that a lot of people know. She's kind of an icon in certain circles. So that's one, and that should be out this year. So it's going to be cool. And then every year, because of my relationship with that community up there, we do a benefit for their school. They have a language immersion, cultural immersion school in Akwesasne. So this September 13th, There'll be an Akwesasne Freedom School benefit concert at White Feather, and we'll have her there, and we'll have the Akwesasne woman singers there, Kondi Wininawi. We're going to have a great band called Dear Lady, which is Molly Obisawin plays in, and some elders there and dancers, so that'll be really, really cool. Wow. If you want to put that on your calendar.
Yeah, is that at White Feather Farm?
Yeah, it'll sell out too, so just keep an eye out. I guess if you get on the, check on the website. Because like last year we did it at Griffin House, which was 400. We did it at Opus 40 the year before, so we're used to about that, and White Feather has a cap of like 85. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
It's going to be nice and simple and intimate.
Cool.
Yeah.
Wow. So much to discuss there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess one thing that I've really been thinking about a lot lately in terms of, like, river ecology and the communication of, like, music with our spaces that we're inhabiting, is this idea of, like, performing and playing music not to, like, other human beings, but to playing, like, to space and to, like, I really love, like, just playing to the river. It makes me really happy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there's, like, so many places and sites on this planet that just feel like they're, like, not getting witnessed and seen and kind of, like, shined on, if you will, you know. And I recently got to do this show where I was on like a boat in a creek that's also a super fun site, and I just felt myself like there being like, whoa, like these are places that like really need to be witnessed, like in this like peak industrialized state of Earth, you know. There's like a lot of spaces that are like not being held and witnessed in that way, so it's really cool to
I mean, that's the feeling that compelled me to get all this going, is that it's pretty much that feeling of like, where's the reciprocity with, like, that's what I do as an artist. My practice is reciprocity with the land for music. Like, I would say that 85% of my music making is for non-humans, you know, like on a day-to-day basis, and it is so important, like you're saying, just to being in relationship through sound. Like, that's the best way to be in relationship. That's how you can cross thresholds. That's why you can affect each other's heart and consciousness.
It's so true. It's like actually a physiological experience. You can hear certain types of music and you can become dysregulated. You can regulate. You can feel your nervous system like coming to stasis.
Right. And like you're saying, it's not that we need it. It's also just like it's necessary for the land and for the water.
It's like if that's the effect that it's having on your own physical body, then there's effects that are also happening with that music that's in that kind of like connection to, you would think, right? That
no doubt.
Goes outside of, you know, just human experience. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, it's massively, it's so beautiful, and it's, the more people do it, the better, you know?
Yeah.
It just makes everything better when you're thinking that way. And you're not in this mindset of, like, what am I getting? What am I taking? It's a great way to, like, people always ask, like, how they can give back or how they can help, you know? And there you go.
Yeah.
Just go see into the water.
It's really interesting because there's also that thing where when you're creating and you're creating music, especially in, like, a human-centric way, it becomes, like, about the music becomes like a commodity or something, or something that you're like producing to be heard, or the other person that's going to hear it now becomes part of this like music making experience in this way that can become like really unsettling, perhaps, is like a word that I would use. And when you're playing without being like, I'm playing to humans or something like that, what I found personally is just, it's just this kind of like amazing somatic experience, because you're not like, oh, is the river judging me?
Yeah, right.
Or like, yeah. So that's, and those are those thresholds that like the project's trying to navigate and speak to too. You know, it's like there's it's just such a dynamic place, because there's that whole world of being sonic reciprocity and communicating and honoring through sound. But there's that middle ground where we are kind of like have a responsibility to speak to our situations and what's going on.
Yeah.
And how do you do it in a way that doesn't, it's so easy to fall into the popularity contest or the social status contest. It's so easy to just not even, you might even start out with all the best intentions, but it's so easy to just slip into this, like, you know, how popular am I, or who's hearing this and do they like it?
Yeah.
And so, like, there's that uncomfortable zone too that I feel like is hard, it's just really under, like, explored, you know. Generally, I think it's dicey, and it's worth, like, getting uncomfortable in there too, and kind of bringing both those worlds together. So that's what I kind of I focus on, and I hopefully can, you know, more projects we get going have all these things happening and create conversations around all these things, you know, and in the sense of, like, belonging and what you know, what effects that has of a feeling like you belong somewhere, and what kind of threats are there to this place that you belong to or don't belong to. And
yeah.
So all these contexts that start to come into play that have nothing to do with, you know, the commodity side of music. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and it makes so much sense, too, because, like, in the way that we're consuming that type of media, usually now we're doing it through a screen. And so the idea of having these, you know, events, I guess, that are really based on just people coming together and playing to a space and, like, being present with each other, I think is something that is just endlessly so important, especially in the world that we're living in now, right? You know, we're getting further and further away from each other.
It becomes more and more clear to see that, yeah. And that's comforting because it's just like, yeah, what we need to just go out and play and get together and play and, like, be out and play. And, like, we have no excuse not to, you know?
Yeah, truly.
Yeah,
and
really.
You never know who you might find when you go down to the river and bring your xylophone.
Yeah, well, I mean, and we, you know, we have to kind of, there's a certain amount of getting together and coalescing and activating spaces that we have work to do.
Definitely.
We have work to do. I've been working for the Kingston Land Trust last few years, and they had a quarry that was just, like, wrecked, and so we worked on it, and we brought in native plants, and we built a stage, and we've been doing shows there. So that's, like, an example of, like, what's possible, you know. You just get a little bit of organization and some good ideas, and people are around to support it, but you just need to be spearheading. So, like, we just played over there a few weeks ago, and it's just beautiful, you know, just everyone's collecting in a quarry, and it sounds great, and you're doing all these things we're saying. So we need to kind of start, we need to start getting out. It's that time of year, too, start picking some spots.
Mm-hmm. Everything's starting to move a little bit faster right about now.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
Summertime.
Yeah, and I don't know, the spring can kind of drive people crazy with how much they want to do. But, yeah, it really... It's nice to also hear, I mean, there are things you can do to get involved if you really want to coalesce with people. But as people also can tend to feel really overwhelmed by the status quo these days and the structures that are in place, something you can do that's just very personal, like we were saying, the simplest thing, going out and playing music for your backyard, for wherever.
Yeah.
Just having a different relationship yourself, and... It can be hard to see how that makes an impact, but it does. You know, I'm a firm believer in whatever change you make internally definitely is reflected outwards.
Yeah, be the change you wish to see.
Yeah.
And challenging the status quo as a practice is empowering in a big way. Like, you feel like you're doing, if you, like you're saying, like, if that's a great example of, like, I'm challenging the status quo by playing to this stream right now. You're setting an example for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that empowers you to challenge the status quo in other ways, you know, because a lot of people walk around feeling like there's just not enough of that going on. I could, you know, challenging the status quo is the status quo is hegemonic. It doesn't matter if you're an artist or not. It's there.
Yeah.
It's infecting all of
us. It keeps things. Truly subversive work is is not as ubiquitous as it might seem. You know, like it keeps the people like in this zone. So
mm-hmm.
I'm all for that. Yeah.
And even like the importance of like communal grieving, you know, and like being inundated with like so many events in the world, like that, like we can co-grieve, you know, we can grieve together like through music too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like these are things that were purposely taken away.
Yeah.
That these community grieving, community celebrating, this, it wasn't by accident that those things were, you know, made sure that didn't happen for hundreds of years, you know. So, you know, we don't put too much pressure on ourselves, but yeah, like little things make a big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's something to not get overwhelmed by, because it's a grounding practice.
Yeah.
It's a recentering. Held by.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And you find that you feel like you're not alone, that you're, when you're doing things like we're talking about, you start to feel like you're being met, you know, that you're co-creating with like the universe, so to speak. Like you start to feel like you're collaborating in ways that you didn't know you could collaborate, and it's hard to articulate, but it's a beautiful feeling to know that you, like, if you take a step that way and you move that way, then something's going to show up and kind of dance with you that you didn't know was going to come along, but you can kind of begin to have faith in it by being authentic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it can be hard to articulate some of the effects.
That's what music's for.
Yeah, but that's exactly what we're saying. Yeah, music is the great communicator, as they say, the great connector. Yeah. And just the more people can come back to that in the actual physical realm, is good. Yeah.
That's right. That's where it's at.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah.
It's the language that we're all fluent in. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing, too, is like everyone can play. There's actually no limitation there. Like, everyone can play.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to be, like, quote-unquote good at it. And I feel like, so I've heard, you know, people be like, oh, I can't do that. I've always wanted to, but, like, you know, I can't do it. And it's just, like, such a beautiful thing that it's fully accessible to everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes me think of another kind of key thing, which is, like, listening practices and how you go about your day and what your listening practices are. And again, it's another area that's been, you know, colonized. So decolonizing your listening practices is a great practice. You know, like we have so much around here and anywhere you are. Just what is music? What is sound? Who gets to tell you if you're good or not or whatever? Yeah. Like, it's not, none of those things even, like you're saying, matter.
Yeah, I guess that limitation is like. Deeply colonial.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when you start getting
that,
like,
discernment.
Like leaning into your listening practice, it also changes your whole life.
Mm.
Yeah.
Real quick.
Not needing to put your mark on everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're almost at the top of the hour here. Very thankful for WGXC 90.7 FM.
Yeah. Yeah. And very thankful to you, Matthew, for coming on.
Thank you, guys. Wonderful to talk with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. I could talk for much longer, but maybe we shouldn't and just get together and play some music.
There you go.
This is the ongoing bit of me and Justin co-hosting that we are going to start a band with every single person that we have interviewed over this summer.
Yeah. Yeah. I was tempted to like just have instruments here and put people on the spot on the show.
Well, we can do but like the last show that we do together. Maybe we invite everyone to come and we just have a jam
right on
while you read all of the events that are going on.
Oh, speaking of, should we do our speed read of events that
are
going on?
Okay, yeah, and I'm going to put on this track while you do it. Okay,
nice.
So let's get that going for you. This is Justin Calder with local events. And, yeah, thank you so much to Matthew.
Yeah, thank you, Matthew, with the Panther Mountain.
Really looking forward
project.
To talking about that more.
And that's panthermountain.io?
That's right.
All right.
All right, and now we are here with Justin Calder,
so
speed read.
That's me, and this is the community calendar. So, coming up at 6 p.m. today, there's a local history talk over at the Hudson Area Library. local history talk, the enduring impact of the Palatine migration on Columbia County in partnership with Jacob Leiser Institute. Local history talk will cover the aftermath of the Palatine migration in our area. Go check that out.